through the 340B program, which is a federal drug discount program. We are able to purchase medications like HIV drugs, but also any medications at a deeply discounted level.
My name is Leslie Walcott, and this is the North Carolina Community HealthCast. And in particular, this is a podcast series with Alvin Capitaco, our communications intern in the spring of 2021, where Alvin interviews a number of health center leaders about community health center work around HIV and AIDS prevention and education and treatment. So today, Alvin and I will be interviewing Kimberly Smith.
My full title is Senior Director for Community Health Planning and Policy at Callan Lord Community Health Center. I use she and her pronouns. It is Callan Lord. We are named for Michael Callan, who is an HIV activist and musician, singer, songwriter, and Audre Lorde, who you probably know was a poet and an out lesbian, and who survived breast cancer, but eventually succumbed to cancer. So we are a federally qualified healthcare center located in New York City. We serve just about 18,000 patients a year. We have three locations, one in Chelsea in Manhattan, one in the South Bronx, and we recently opened up a clinic in Brooklyn just last year. So we, you know, like federally qualified healthcare centers across the country, you know, we exist to serve, provide primary healthcare to anybody, regardless of ability to pay. But we sort of have a special niche in that we are, our patients primarily are coming from the LGBTQ population, and about a quarter of our patients are transgender, gender non-binary. Maybe about 20% are people living with HIV or impacted by HIV. So that's sort of our specialty, if you will, and we consider ourselves an affirming healthcare environment and very competent in serving that community. And many people come to us, you know, because they've been had bad experiences in other healthcare environments, and or were turned away or have delayed healthcare, quite honestly. So we exist to serve and provide high quality healthcare for those communities, but for anybody, regardless of ability to pay.
HIV is high among the LGBTI community. Can you talk to us about the work that you do with LGBTI communities and why the LGBTI community is the niche of your community health center?
So Callan Lord was created out of a need to provide healthcare to the LGBTQ community. We've actually been around for more than 50 years. We started out as two very, very grassroots clinicians in the community saw a need to provide sexual health services to the queer community. At the time, there's a quote from one of the people who was one of the founding providers saying that we provided health services for the hippies, freaks, and queers in the East Village. So there were two separate sexual health kind of networks. Actually, one was focused on women. One was focused on it's called the Gay Men's Health Project, not to be confused with Gay Men's Health Crisis, which is now GMHC. And so those two efforts came together as Community Health Project in the early 80s when HIV was known and came to be in existence. And so they thought it was best to combine efforts to address the HIV epidemic. And that eventually became Callan Lord Community Health Center. And so I think basically we knew back in the late 60s, early 70s, that the mainstream medical system was not really well suited for caring for LGBTQ communities. And it's well documented now and certainly since then that LGBTQ individuals, we, you know, face challenges and barriers accessing needed health services, and as a result can experience worse health outcomes. So runs the gamut from stigma to discrimination to violence to rejection, you know, from family and community. And then there's the other barriers that we often face within healthcare, which is like getting substandard care, being misgendered, outright denial of care because of a person's sexual orientation. So our communities are often reluctant to seek healthcare treatment because we've had a bad experience. We, you know, fear judgment, and sometimes it's just too much to overcome, like when a provider is just uninformed. So Callen Lord came to be out of the need to, you know, create an affirming, safe space that provided health quality healthcare to LGBTQ communities. And then, you know, we didn't get our FQHC status until much later. And in fact, when we first tried to apply for our FQHC status, we were denied from the government, saying that they, I don't know the exact quote, but our executive director often paraphrases this, but apparently the government told us that they thought we would be, that we would discriminate against straight people, that just by having an LGBTQ affirming health center would be discriminatory for straight people. So we ended up having to do our FQHC status initially as a subgrantee through another network. And then in 2016, our Bronx clinic opened under its own grantee status. Because we are a federally qualified healthcare center, as you know, we will serve anybody. But it's just that we have developed this sort of expertise and competence in LGBTQ healthcare.
Were you, before you had federal funding, did you ever operate as a free clinic, or did you always operate as part of another health center?
I think those two little scrappy clinics were sort of free. Our promotional materials say we were born out of the Stonewall era. And, you know, so it's really like we're talking a long time ago, 69, 70. And these outfits that used to serve the community were like, I think one was in apartment basement or something. And even when they combined to be the Community Health Project, we were located in on the second floor of the LGBTQ center here in New York City before we got our Article 28 licensure, which is a New York primary care license, and before we got the FQHC status. You know, we were sort of scrappy and grassroots. And we kind of, even though we are fully fledged FQHC now, we still have that kind of scrappy grassroots feel about us, I think.
Can you also talk to us about the state of HIV in the United States and why the work that you do is so important?
Yeah, and I neglected to mention that my role at Callen Lord is really to oversee the public policy and advocacy. It is a relatively new role. I've been at Callen Lord for a little more than 5 years. And before I came, we didn't really have a formal policy or advocacy program, if you will. So, you know, right now in the United States, I think, you know, we are seeing some successes with HIV. You know, I think we are at a place where there are still way too many new HIV infections. I think it's a little more than 37,000 new HIV infections occur every year. About 60% of the more than 1 million people living with HIV in the United States are not receiving continuous medical care. And nearly half of people living with HIV are not on treatment or virally suppressed. So we're achieving some successes with the HIV epidemic, but there's still a long way to go. And what we're finding is that there are disparities in care, so that, you know, those who are benefiting from, we're not seeing that the benefits of treatment and access to care equally across populations. There's a lot of focus, you probably hear from the government, as there should be, to make investments and really hone in on the HIV epidemic and on who is, you know, getting HIV and how we can make sure they have access to treatment and how we can make sure that they are virally suppressed and that they can live a long life. And unfortunately, we are just seeing disparities in terms of, you know, that access to treatment, that access to care. And so while we've, you know, over the last 40 years, HIV has now been around about 40 years, I think officially next month, it'll be 40 years. And we've certainly, there have been so many advances with medicine with care and what we know about HIV and preventing HIV, and we have new, they're not new anymore, but prevention tools like pre-exposure prophylaxis, PrEP, or PEP, post-exposure prophylaxis, and new treatments on the market, et cetera. The fact is that there's still these sort of vexing disparities that exist in the epidemic, and that's where I think you're seeing the government is kind of really honing in on trying to figure out why those disparities exist and how can we, you know, infuse money into communities and into clinics and organizations to try to address those disparities. So it's kind of we're in sort of an interesting moment with HIV. There's a plan to end HIV, or to reduce at least new HIV infections by 90% by 2030. That's a federal government plan. And so recently this plan was initiated, and there's been a lot of focus on particular jurisdictions across the United States, counties, states, cities, where most new HIV infections occur. And so the plan is really attempting to kind of infuse a lot of funding and resources into those communities to address the epidemic, since more than half of new HIV infections happen in these, I guess, I think it's 48 jurisdictions across the country. So, you know, we can sort of celebrate success in terms of how far we've come with HIV, but we, in order to kind of really get to an end, short of a cure, of course, it would be great if we could get a cure. We have to really kind of target our investments and our effort into to be very smart and strategic about how we target our resources and investments.
I just have a follow-up question. You mentioned where most HIV cases occur. So I'm just interested if you could tell me, like, where do most HIV cases occur?
Well, there's a number of, I think the data suggests that, I think it's 50% of new HIV diagnosis occurred in only 48 counties, Washington, DC, San Juan, Puerto Rico. And then there's 7 states that have a substantial rural burden, with over 75 cases and 10% or more of their diagnosis in rural areas. So it includes New York and most of the counties in New York City, not the state, Bronx County, Kings County, New York County on that. So there are like different counties within states that are sort of hotspots, if you will.
According to the CDC website, the Ending the HIV Epidemic Initiative infuses 57 priority jurisdictions with additional resources, technology, and expertise to expand HIV prevention and treatment activities. In North Carolina, Mecklenburg County is a hotspot.
The overarching point is that the federal government is seeing that there's these hotspots where these cities, these counties, states, where the disproportionate share of HIV is happening. And so we want to focus our attention in those areas and try to reduce new infections and make sure people who are living with HIV get connected to treatment and are in ongoing medical care.
What's your feeling or impression about people's knowledge, attitudes, and behavior towards HIV?
The general public is aware of HIV. They are aware of the AIDS epidemic. I think we still have some work to do to educate people about, for example, the different prevention tools that are available, such as PrEP. I think, you know, we've done a really good job of getting the basic education out, but it's repetition is really, really important. And I think we have to kind of keep reminding people that HIV is still an epidemic. There is no cure. Yes, there are really great treatments on the market now that will enable people to live longer. And I think people are aware of that. And there's some complacency around HIV. And now, of course, with COVID, we've had to pivot our attention very justifiably to paying attention to this new pandemic. And so HIV has kind of fallen off the radar, I would say, or fallen down the radar, I would think, in the general public's minds. I think it remains high on the radar for those of us who are working in this field and doing advocacy to ensure that that we kind of stay focused and encourage all the successes that we've had so that we can kind of really get to an end of the epidemic.
I asked Kimberly to talk about the Save New York Safety Net Advocacy Initiative.
There's a coalition in New York State called Save New York Safety Net, and it came to be because there is a specific threat to 340B funding that was happening here in New York State. Our governor in the fiscal year 20 budget proposed carving out the Medicaid pharmacy benefit from managed care to fee-for-service. And this carve-out would have eliminated any community health care center who receives 340B revenue and savings. It would have eliminated our ability to access that revenue because we only are able, through the 340B program, which is a federal drug discount program, we are able to purchase medications like HIV drugs, but also any medications at a deeply discounted level. And then we are able to charge the managed care company at a usual and customary rate. And then we keep that revenue, that savings. And that savings and revenue goes back into our community healthcare center. And it subsidizes really important services and wraparound healthcare services that support people living with HIV, but also people who are not living with HIV, like care coordination, like quality management, like nursing. And so when the governor threatened this pharmacy carve out, the structure that was already in place to organize was the Ending the Epidemic coalition. We'd had a campaign here in New York to end HIV by 2020, and we were already well on our way. I mean, it was 2020. We had already had that sort of coalition structure. We were already meeting. There's a legislative work group call that happened every other week. And when we learned that the governor made this proposal, it was in that Ending the Epidemic coalition that we started to talk about what kind of devastating impact this would have on community health centers, on Ryan White care programs. That was our organizing starting point. And then it grew from there. So now there are two coalitions. Now there's still the Ending the Epidemic coalition, which continues to meet, even though 2020 has come and gone. Now we're talking about what happens how do we continue to implement the plan? And there's a separate Save New York Safety Net coalition, which is solely focused on 340B and the Medicaid pharmacy carve out. The connection to HIV is important because many community health centers who serve a high volume of people living with HIV or people who benefit from PrEP and are 340B covered entities are going to be relying on that savings. And as perverse as it is, HIV drugs are very expensive. And so are hepatitis C drugs, and you know, many drugs are expensive, but we know that HIV drugs are very expensive. So if the clinic or program is a 340B covered entity, we are able to use that savings and that revenues and reinvest it back into our program to ensure the highest health outcomes possible for our patients. So, because we know that it's not just getting a person in to see their doctor. There's a lot of other things that have to happen around that primary care visit to ensure that the person's health outcomes are met and that they stay on the treatment and that they are virally suppressed and that they can manage their diabetes or, you know, get the proper learn about their nutrition, et cetera.
Furthermore, I asked Kimberly to share what she learned from HIV organizing.
What I've learned from HIV organizing is just that how important it is to become sort of credible expert on the topic that you are organizing around. As a community, I think early HIV activism was really about people, regular people who were impacted by HIV, whether they were living with HIV themselves or had friends or family members, learning about the science of HIV, learning about how funding flows to the government, how research happens, you know, how to make clinical trials happen, and really immersing themselves in that and putting the pressure on the people who could make things happen. And I think we in the Save New York Safety Net Coalition community, I think we can call ourselves a community now, had to do the same. We had to 340B, though many of our clinics and programs benefit from it, it's not a program that everybody's super knowledgeable about. And it's kind of a wonky, technical, in the background kind of program that's so very important to the sustainability of our clinics and the health of our patients. And so we had to dig in deep and learn what we needed to learn. We had to figure out who were the pressure points, what were the pressure points in our state's legislature and in our state's administration. And I think what we learned from HIV activism is that sort of persistence and just leaning really into the fight and everybody kind of taking a piece of it and doing our best to meet the goal that we set to meet, which was to either reject the pharmacy carve out or to delay it. And we were able to delay it. So we consider that a success. It would have been better. Of course, we would have loved it if we somehow got rid of it altogether, but delay was a pretty good success.
Do you think that HIV would be much worse without community health centers?
Oh, goodness, yes. I mean, I think community health centers are foundational to management and treatment and implementation of any plan to end HIV. Prevention is key, and we have to make sure that we you know, continue to come up with innovative tools and messaging how to prevent HIV. It is wholly preventable. However, and I think community health centers can play a role in that too. Community health centers do outreach. Callen Lord is a great example. We were an early adopter of PrEP and remain one of the probably largest PrEP practices, definitely in the state, if not the country. And then also just really community health centers are critical in terms of supporting people living with HIV to ensure that they are connected to treatment and that they stay on treatment, that they have access to that treatment and that their, you know, outcomes are monitored. And that happens, through community health centers. I think we have a very sort of special and unique way of treating our patients that, you know, where the relationship between the provider and the patient and all the other people who surround that patient to ensure the case manager, housing specialist, sometimes legal support, et cetera. We community health centers don't just do the primary care. We are able to connect people to all those other services that help to ensure that a person stays healthy.
From what you know from your work with both HIV and the 340B organizing, from your experiences, what do you think people in North Carolina could learn from you?
I think you have to know your state and your legislature and your communities. And, I think that sort of quest to become credible experts also applies to knowing your quote unquote audience, right? I think it's really learning what are the political pressure points, what does the community want, and engaging as many stakeholders as you can. As hard as that is, and as annoying as that is, it's hard. It's very easy to kind of surround ourselves with like-minded advocates and providers and such. And not that we shouldn't still try to do that, but I think it's also important to try to engage, people who care about the issue but might have a different take on things, but they might, with that different take, they might also come with some really great skills and knowledge or, particular tools to, fight for whatever policy or funding you're fighting for. So I think that's one we learned with the Save New York Safety Net is we, even in the HIV community, there was a group of us who were very used to working together, but then there were others that we weren't used to working with. And I'm not, we wouldn't necessarily always align with on other issues. And they came into the fold and we welcomed them into the fold. And we just had to work together because we all, we were all sort of fighting the same, I don't want to say enemy exactly, but we were all fighting for the same thing. And it wasn't always comfortable or easy, but I think that just kind of sticking with it really made a difference in the end. So I would just encourage folks in North Carolina to try to, engage as many different stakeholders as you can on whatever the issue is that you're working on.
And this wraps up our series on HIV awareness, prevention, and treatment. Thank you for listening.